I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is John Passavant. John is the CEO of Startup Waco. He tells us a little bit about his life in New York City, how he found a local girl that brought him to Texas, and the opportunities for entrepreneurs and anyone interested in entrepreneurship that Startup Waco provides. But first, it's the word on the street. The word on the street for October is harvest. And to welcome in the season, I have invited Bethel, Erickson, Bruce onto the show with the Waco Downtown Farmers Market. Are you loving this weather?
Oh, it's fabulous. And we had some great rain, so things can't get much better.
Yeah, well, I am loving these 70-degree days, and we're going to have more of them. And hopefully they start coming on Saturdays when we have the Waco Downtown Farmers Market there. Between Washington and Austin and between 5th and 6th Streets in the heart of downtown Waco. So what does the fall season look like for the farmers market? What's different?
It's really great because we have all of the crops that start coming back. So we have pumpkins, squash, peppers, tomatoes, all of the herbs. And then we're starting green season as well as the root crops as we move into colder weather. So when you look at all of the produce, it's kind of the pinnacle of what you would want to see in a farmer's market season.
And we can see beautiful gourds and pumpkins, or people there selling fresh cut flowers.
Yes. We just had a new vendor start last week called Bloom Waco, and they are doing price per stem as well as bouquets of flowers grown by local farmers. And then, as you mentioned, lots of beautiful pumpkins that you can both eat or just put on your porch for display.
What's your history with the farmers market in Waco, Bethel?
I actually helped start it back in 2011. I had previously been an intern at the World Hunger Relief Farm and saw potential for more access for local food in our area. So we banded together with a number of other individuals and farmers in the community to make the farmers market actually happen.
And for your family and you, the Waco Farmers Market is not just something that happens on Saturdays. This has really become a lifestyle of homesteading for you and your family out in Mart.
Yep. Yeah, we have 20 acres, a couple of stock tanks, pigs, chickens, and it's a lovely little place.
Did you always want to have an agrarian lifestyle like that, or was your involvement with the farmers market kind of what spurred you and gave you the confidence to do that?
I've always enjoyed a good-sized garden. I always figured I would be in the city with a number of animals, but having access to land, especially during a pandemic with growing boys, has been absolutely wonderful.
Well, especially during the pandemic, it is so important for people to get outside. The farmers market happens every Saturday from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m.
Correct.
I can't imagine we have many listeners who've never been to the farmers market before, but if you're a newbie or someone from out of town, what would people expect to see at a typical Waco farmers market?
So, of course, we have seasonal produce, but we also have meat vendors selling everything from chicken to pork, bacon, eggs. We even have lamb now. Then we have a couple of plant vendors. So whether you're looking for succulents or fall transplants for your garden, you can find those. And we have a number of body care items like goat milk soap, natural deodorant, lip balms and salves, and a little bit of everything in between. So we try to prioritize agricultural products, whatever your product might be, whether it's salsa, we want you seeking local ingredients as much as possible to put that in your final product that you sell. But we also have donuts. Nightlight Donuts will be coming back in the next few weeks. We have coffee vendors, boba tea, and we have dumplings. That's been a new addition as well. So all kinds of goodies.
Check out Downtown Waco's Farmer Market this Saturday. Bethel, Erickson, Bruce with the Farmer's Market, thank you so much for filling us in and helping us welcome in this season of Harvest in Waco.
Thanks for having me.
I'm now joined in studio by John Passavant. John is the CEO of Startup Waco. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Good to be here. Thanks, Austin.
What is your Waco history, John?
So my first experience of Waco was flying in from New York City to meet my future wife's family. So it was like I didn't see much of the city going past me on the drive in from the airport. I was a little bit too nervous, but met them as we dated and then eventually got engaged and married. And so we would come down to Waco pretty frequently for mostly holidays. So my first early experience was just coming in for Christmas and summer vacations and Thanksgivings, things like that.
And when did your wife, Jenny, and you move to Waco?
So Jenny grew up in China Spring and moved for college. She went up to New York. She went to FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology. And she knew she wanted to be a fashion designer. So she knew the best place to do that was New York. So she picked up from Waco and moved there. I grew up in Pittsburgh, just outside of Pittsburgh. Went to school north of Pittsburgh in northwestern Pennsylvania and didn't have a strong sense of what I wanted to do following school. I had a degree in business, was considering going into an MBA program, was even considering seminary. I was kind of all over the place. And so I had an opportunity to move to New York to work in something completely different. And I did it. And I thought it was going to be a six-month thing. Like a lot of people in New York, you just go there to experience it for a bit. And for me, it turned into almost 20 years that I lived there. And so Jenny and I, with our family, moved back to Waco just 12 months ago.
Now, let's give the people a little bit of what they want.
Okay.
What brought you to New York? I'm looking at this handsome face across the table from
me. Right. Well, I don't know. It's not 2006 anymore. But, you know, I graduated from college in 2001. And being a little bit all over the place, randomly had the opportunity to go up to work in fashion, to work in the modeling industry. And somebody growing up in Pennsylvania, I mean, I didn't even know that was a thing. I mean, is that even a real job for a guy to go work in the modeling field?
You'd seen Zoolander.
I mean, I had seen that, but that didn't exactly, quell many of my fears. So I had an opportunity, went up there, tried it out. Again, I thought it was going to be, okay, this is going to be for a summer. And I moved there in June of 2001. And so obviously 3 months later, 9/11 happens. I'm there to experience it. My agency was two blocks from Ground Zero. I lived in Long Island City at the time, which is just about a mile as a crow flies from Ground Zero. And so I really experienced the city in a very unique moment of history. And it kind of, in a weird sense, as a lot of people were leaving the city, for many of us and for myself, it really kind of grafted my heart to the city in a strange way. I saw humanity in a truly unique way. I had never been through anything like that before, as most people my age hadn't. And so something about that made me think, I want to stay here. I want to be a part of this rebuild. I want to see how the city rebounds from something like this, how our nation rebounds from something like this. And so I got committed and got involved with a lot of the rebuilding efforts that were happening in the city. And once the economy began to pick up again, I found success in the modeling field. And you've got a lot of people that work on your behalf, and it's not a super enviable lifestyle in many ways. You're traveling a ton. You're living all over the world. You're you're often in strange countries and strange places. And but it was amazing for a early 20s kid to be able to see the world in that way and spend significant amounts of time living in other countries and experiencing that. So I feel nothing but fortunate for having that opportunity, for sure.
I wonder if the unity that you felt with your New Yorkers after 9/11 is going to be translated to the New Yorkers currently who've lived through COVID in the city. Because I've heard of a number of people leaving New York. If you could afford it, you probably went to Vermont or somewhere else. But some people, at least, it's been hard for them to make the recognition that, oh, I need to go back to New York.
For sure. You're absolutely right. I mean, I think in the early 2000s, New York was really at the beginning of, an unprecedented upswing. The mayor, Giuliani, had gotten crime under control for the first time really since the 80s and early 90s. New York was a place where people and families could live and thrive unlike it had been since the 50s. And so you saw a ton of people beginning to move, and then 9/11 shattered that for a lot of people, but it quickly came back. Something about this pandemic in particular, because it thrives in density, it has a very unique effect on New York. I think that it's causing a lot of people, I think my age and in their 20s and 30s, to rethink why they're living where they're living. Most people move to New York because you have to, because the job is there, the opportunity is there, the company is based there. And in some ways, I know even some companies that I've worked with, having your workforce live in New York, it just, you know, at least you know that they've got a certain level of grit that they're going to come through, and there's just a certain level of expectation. Now with companies sort of encouraging their workforce to get out, to be remote, New York and all of the, both the good things and the difficult things about it are no longer a requirement. It's just causing people to rethink. And I think you're right. People that have the means are leaving and rethinking. There are certainly, I believe in New York. I think it will come back. It might be different, but it'll come back. I think the sad thing is, whenever you see these macro shifts in the economy or in the nation at a society level, it always affects the least fortunate the most. It affects the people with the least amount of means the most. And so you're seeing that. I think the people that are being hurt the most by the pandemic in New York aren't, you know, the people that have to very sadly relocate to their home in the Hamptons or in, you know, Greenwich. It's the people that don't have an option and that they have to find a way to survive in an already difficult environment made even more difficult. They don't have an option for private school. They've got to figure it out with their kids in the public school system there, which is a huge challenge. It's the largest public school system in the country. And my goodness, they're having to figure everything out from the ground up.
Going to start having outdoor classes in 15-degree weather.
Yeah, and where do you do that in a space that's packed so dense with people already that, you know, you can't even have decent outdoor spaces to just hang out in, let alone have to do everything you would normally do inside?
A few weeks ago, I had on Eric Shepard, who's mm-hmm. the executive director of the Waco Civic Theater, and he was telling me about how the Broadway season is shut down. And it's hard to see how it comes back because it can sometimes take $500,000 a week to keep one of these shows up.
Yeah.
And in his mind, this is a real opportunity for community theaters who work with smaller budgets to be agile and to be able to provide live entertainment in a way that Broadway can't. I would imagine that COVID has presented some really interesting opportunities for the work that you do with Startup Waco in helping gear small business owners for this COVID and post-COVID world.
It is. You're right. At Startup Waco, you know, I've been here 12 months. We're an independent nonprofit organization, so we exist to serve entrepreneurs in the greater Waco region in McLennan County and in Central Texas, really. So we find ourselves coming in, as I've sort of surveyed, it's been a strange year for sure, but we work with a lot of both the very small micro businesses, the Main Street businesses, the quality of life businesses that are here, as well as new types of businesses that haven't had the opportunity to really form here that might be more of the high growth technology-based startups. But in either case, it's more, there's a large middle ground of development and large even manufacturing bases, more conventional economic development work that is being done by the city and the chambers and so on. But we really operate on the edges of both the very, very, very micro businesses and also the new types of industries coming in. So, you know, it has been equally challenging for sort of both ends of the spectrum. I think on one side, on the more high growth technology focused startups coming in, it's a question of structure. It's a question of raising capital. It's a question of having workforce development and what does that look like? I'm working with one company now that is trying to imagine what a remote company looks like. It's about to launch. It hasn't launched yet, and it's asking questions. You know, could we become one of the first remote-only companies? So they don't have a structure or a framework or a culture of having one place where everyone works at all. What does that look like? What does that mean for talent acquisition? What does that mean for productivity in all different levels? For the really small businesses here in Waco, gosh, I mean, it sort of is like you take a pretty challenging environment and then you just turn up the heat. You know, you had a lack of resource before, you have it much more now. You have a need for, you know, investment in your digital presence or in all the things that you know you need to be doing to build your business and it's hard to do. Well, it's just that much harder now, and especially then when the sales and revenue that you maybe had become accustomed to is no longer guaranteed. And so, yes, there's a lot of opportunity, I think, certainly challenge. In the beginning days of the pandemic, we were all just freaking out a little bit, to be honest, and not knowing where this was going to go. I think by mid-April, May, we realized, like, okay, this isn't going to be the sort of end-of-life story for everyone. We're going to find a way through it. What does that look like? And then slowly beginning to turn of how can this, you know, sort of downturn become an opportunity.
So a little over 12 months ago, you were in New York City reading a job application for CEO of Startup Waco. What did you think the job was on paper, and what has surprised you about being in this role of CEO of Startup Waco for the last 12?
So great question. And I really was not, I wasn't looking to move. We were happy in New York. Of course, we had no idea what the forward 12 months was going to bring, but we weren't looking to move. We had a community there. We had friends there. We were raising our family there. When the opportunity came up, it really, for lack of a better term, just clicked inside of me as like, oh, this is very interesting. When I brought it up to my wife, we both clicked and agreed. And so it was one of those things that just forces you to pause and say, okay, we have to explore this. I think my fear looking at her, what some of my expectation was that this was going to be potentially a sort of classic public-private partnership role where it's probably more political than it is hands-on, where there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through and you're tied into a lot of, preconceived structures of ways to support people. That was my fear. I think even in the interview process, those fears were alleviated by the people on our board who I genuinely feel have a desire to help in whatever means necessary. Even how they directed from a vision standpoint the organization to be committed to minority and women-owned business owners in McLennan County, not just, you know, high growth tech startups. It was all about how do we invest in this community? How do we, you know, water the seeds that are here in this community? How do we rally the resources around? How do we provide guidance where it's needed? And they sort of said, this is the mandate, this is what we want to do, but we want you to concept how that's being done. And so that got me really excited. And so being here and being a part of it, I've been nothing but excited and thrilled to meet all of the other support organizations in the community, to get to know the heads of all the chambers, to get to know the City Center Waco, and to get to know the people that work for the city of Waco themselves. And we've got an amazing community here. I think it's a defensible competitive advantage for businesses in Waco that we have such a cohesive, forward-looking and supportive group of community leaders.
You're joining me in the studio today, having come from the BOSS Conference, which is a yearly conference that the African American Chamber puts on. You're hearing from John Passavant, CEO of Startup Waco. What are your impressions of the ecosystem in Waco? We mentioned the African American Chamber, there's the Hispanic Chamber, there's the Greater Waco Chamber, which is largely the white chamber. Is this a workable system? Is it something that there's unity among these chambers? How do they all function together, and how can residents of McLennan County and business owners in McLennan County get involved and support these organizations?
You know, when you think about public-private partnerships, organizations like this, there is a precedent to look at. Organizations like Startup Waco first were founded over 10 years ago, coming out of Colorado, coming out of Boulder, where it sort of looked at a tier three city, let's say, that has resources and has a school and a university system, but no real cohesive way of tying these things together, and they did it. In big cities like New York, like San Francisco, even Boston, Chicago, Austin now, you've got so much density of those resources in one place that organizations like this still exist and need to happen, but they don't have quite the same mandate as like a Startup Waco would. And so I think that when you think of how the organizations work together, there's a lot that we can look at. I think that if you look at Waco and try to place it on a map from a economic development standpoint or an early a startup standpoint, and you compare it to even Austin or Dallas or any of those tier one or tier two cities, it's the amount of activity that we have just doesn't even register. It doesn't blip on the map. We don't have enough fundings here. We don't have enough. We have one venture capital fund here. It's small. It's a very small amount of activity. However, I really am of the belief that Waco is much more like than it is unlike cities in America, that there are a massive amount of similar peer cities like Waco in America that are trying to figure out what entrepreneurialism looks like for the majority of its citizens. And when you compare Waco to those cities, well, then we all of a sudden start placing at the top of those lists when you think about the resources that we have here that are completely outsized, in my opinion, for other peer cities of, you know, say 250,000 people in the MSA. When you think about Baylor University, when you think about MCC and TSTC, our university system here is absolutely amazing. And then you think of, you know, big, you know, corporate headquarters like Neighborly here is an amazing asset. When you think of, and then just like we were saying, the cohesiveness of a lot of the support organizations like the chambers and the community foundations, the way the community banks work within the community, there's a real identity to Waco, which is unusual for cities of our size that Waco has. That as an outsider coming in, I can notice right away. And that's a huge asset. And then you throw in, you know, something like Magnolia into the mix, and you think, wow, like what is in the water there in that river that is making all these things sort of happen? And I love looking at Waco in those lists of cities. When I think, you know, we it's not just about even setting up our own growth and development as a city, but we really have an opportunity to be an example of economic development, of startup culture for cities like ours in America. We're not going to be Austin. We're never going to be Austin simply because of the fact that Austin exists and it's 90 miles away. We don't want to be Austin. We don't need to be Austin. We're going to be something else and be very uniquely Waco. And so what that looks like exactly, it's hard to say, but we know that the pieces are here. We've got a lot of smart people working together to try to figure out what that looks like. And the key factor being not just what it looks like for a certain set of industries or categories, but what it looks like for everyone in the community. I think that's a very important differentiation that I've noticed, that we're committed to seeing all subsets of the city flourish as we grow.
I've noticed during COVID an upswing of entrepreneurialism.
Yeah.
People are sitting at home and they're deciding to bake bread and post about it on TikTok and see if anybody wants to buy some, or maybe you're making masks and manufacturing those for folks. If I had started a business during COVID and really liked it, but I didn't know the next steps, can I come knock on the door of Startup Waco and talk to somebody?
Absolutely. I mean, that's literally our job. That's why we exist. That's why we're there. You're absolutely right. Around the country, I mean, we've seen an uptick in LLC filings, in the way that, it's partially born out of necessity. People lose their jobs. They're looking for something to do. The barrier to entry for starting a business has never been lower. So, you and I could start a company if we wanted to right now, like in this interview. It would be easy. Just plug it in, build a website, post it, and it's done. Now, that presents challenges. There's a ton of noise. It's hard to get your business seen or heard. So there's a lot of thought that has to go into it. But at Startup Waco, we have a bunch of ways that you can get in touch if you've done that. And just want to, I think the first step for a lot of businesses is going through a proper feasibility study. Like, okay, here's my idea. Everyone's told me that I'm good at this and people are asking me to make this thing for them or provide this service for them. Should I make it a business or not? There are ways to think about this. There are gating tools that you can, and thought experiments that you can put your idea through to understand, like, is there a market there? Not, you know, you could be the best baker in the world, but if you don't have a well thought out business plan, you're gonna set yourself up for some challenging times. And so we try to provide those services. We do it in structured formats, just in one-on-one advisory service formats. Everything's always free. We exist to, be that first step in understanding what your journey is going to be.
The Startup Waco offices are on the 600 block of Austin Avenue in the heart of downtown. And in addition to the training that you offer, you guys also put on awesome events. I've been to a dumpling rolling event there. I went to an Enneagram workshop at Startup Waco. So y'all really are utilizing the space to put out ideas and words that are big, and they can really shape the culture in Waco. I think that the feeling of entrepreneurialism that you being in that position and with just this location in downtown, it's really helped spur people's creativity for what they can do. And before this interview, we heard from Bethel Erickson Bruce from the Farmers Market. And the Farmers Market is another great example of homegrown talent. You can go there every Saturday and you can interact with amazing vendors.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I can't take credit for any of the placement of the office or anything. That was the product of a lot of people's hard work and time and energy. I mean, Startup Waco really started a group of people getting together for breakfast at 7 a.m. for a couple of years, talking and dreaming about what something like this could look like. So I stand on the shoulders of a lot of people that have both put their time, their energy, their acumen, and their resources and capital into play to make this happen. But you are seeing it pop up in the strangest places. You're seeing, you know, we're seeing, you know, people that are just working regular jobs that are wanting to open restaurants, and we see people that we see police officers that are wanting to open bakeries, and we're seeing, you know, farmers market. The farmers market is an excellent example of a place to try an idea. There's a certain framework you got to fit into to work in that space, but there's other food options that you can look at if you have a food concept. There's a lot of places to start and a lot of things that you can just sort of plug into your idea to see if it's going to be something that's viable. And the first step is just getting good advice. I mean, no business exists in a vacuum. Everybody needs support, and we all get it, whether you get it through someone you know, or you get it through the school that you went to, or just through a friend. We all need that advice at the right time. And so, reaching out and just asking is the first step.
John Passavant is the CEO of Startup Waco. Thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot.
My pleasure. I really enjoy this show. I think the way that you ask questions, you're incredibly thoughtful and digging into our community. So thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks again to John Passavant, Bethel Erickson Bruce of the Waco Downtown Farmers Market, and you for tuning in to another episode of Downtown Depot. Find me on Instagram and Facebook in between episodes at Waco Business News if you want to keep up with all the exciting things happening in town. And you can find me back here on the third Friday of October on 103.3 Waco Public Radio. I'm your host, Austin Meek, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.